live and direct from the free speech zone called America. The weekend home for truly radical progressives. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ.
Good day, everybody. Welcome to the weekend. Glad to have you here for the Russ Belville Show. Wherever you may be listening, you are the good Americans we want to talk about. It doesn't matter what part of the country you're in, we're all good Americans, patriotic Americans. I don't buy what Sarah Palin is selling. Doesn't matter if you live in the cities or the country, if you're a trucker driving on the road, we're all good Americans. And we're going to figure this thing out here, living through the tail end of George W. Bush's neocon nightmare and eagerly anticipating the next election. That's right, it's our last show before the election, so that's going to be the topic on most of the segments today is election-related stuff, and we'll be taking your calls at 888-7-RADICAL, 888-772-3422 if you want to get involved in the conversation. And speaking of getting involved in the conversation, we have to welcome our engineer, the man from across the pond, all the way across the continent in Washington, D.C., taking your calls, an odd fish who got off his chump when he was on the hoy with his chaps, racing around like a blue-arsed fly after a comely lass shaped like a dead heat in a Zeppelin race. It's our good friend Stevie Webb.
Wow. That's one of your best yet.
Thank you.
You're just loading them up there. That's really good.
I particularly like the lass shaped like a dead heat in a Zeppelin race. I had to think about that for a while before I really got it, but
yeah.
I like that one.
There's a couple of good ones there. Overhead view of two badly parked Volkswagens. Two balloons having a fight in a sweater.
There we go. Yeah, the British people have got some of the greatest slang. Two countries separated by a common language.
Absolutely. We have some of the best euphemisms on the planet. We haven't got much else anymore. Hooliganism and euphemisms. That's what we do well.
That's the chief British exports. Hooliganism and euphemism. Okay. So, hey, just wondering also, how was your Halloween last night? Did you have a Halloween party or anything?
I couldn't find anywhere to park. It was terrifying.
We don't do Halloween as much, certainly in the big cities in Britain, mm-hmm. as much as you do them over here. This is something that has really sort of gotten to me after the past couple of years. I had to go and move my car because I was in like a 2-hour spot, mm-hmm. and I got stuck behind a horse and cart.
A horse and cart?
In the middle of D.C., giving small children rides to the pumpkin patch. A horse and cart?
Hmm. Were they dressed up as Amish?
I don't know. I was behind them.
That would make kind of an interesting little costume, right?
Yeah, you know,
that'd
seriously.
Be a costume for the horse.
I mean,
something to think about. Yeah, we had a big.
Did you have a good one?
Oh my God, we had a big Halloween party here at my place with tons of friends and family and such. And my outfit this year, I went as the new drug czar, except you know with a little twist. I was General Lehi. Yeah, think about it, right? General Lehi. And I had a whole military outfit there for my supposed drug czar. You can check out a picture of it, if you'd like, out on my normal daily audio stash blog out at stash.normal.org. You can see the General Lehi outfit. Yeah, we had a ton of people there and, you know, mm-hmm. great costumes. And some friends came over and we decorated the whole place with a fake graveyard outside and the spider webs inside and black light.
Excellent.
It's a lot of fun, you know.
Excellent.
I think a lot of us folks here in the country who don't have children, mm-hmm. we kind of focus more on Halloween than we do on maybe Christmas or something mm-hmm. like that. So
yeah,
we had a ton of fun. But you know,
it reminds me of that that episode of that '70s show where they're trying to explain it to his name is.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about it. Are you seriously telling me I go up to people's door and knock on it and they give me candy like that? For free? I don't believe you. Because I did what I do every year. I just stick two biros up my nose and go as a pencil case.
There we go. All right. Well, I hope everyone else had a good Halloween. And, you know, the nightmare of the Halloween the horror show that's been going on for the past 8 years is almost over. We've just got, let me check my little countdown clock. We've got 2 days left. What is it? 2 days, 12 hours, 49 minutes, if you're listening to me live, until the election. And people just can't wait. The early voting numbers are way up. We got, you know, an increase in turnout so far. I'm really looking forward to this election. And, you know, there's a whole lot going on with that. And I know that a lot of you are like me. You know, you work full-time job for a living, so you don't have the time all the time to catch up with the newspapers or the evening news. So at the top of the Russ Belville Show, I help you catch up on the week's hottest news topics with
The Week in 90 Seconds.
30 million people watch Barack Obama's 30-minute infomercial.
I'll also lay out in specific detail what I'll do as president to restore the long-term health of our economy and our middle class.
Senator Lindsey Graham saw it and described it to a McCain-Palin rally.
Anybody see the infomercial last night? We'd played that at a prison camp and it violated the Geneva Convention.
Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska is convicted on 7 felony counts of corruption. Looks like your career is going down a big truck, Senator.
It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
George W. Bush still has 79 days left to pardon Stevens and wreck the country.
The threat to America has not expired.
The Mormons have poured millions into the anti-gay marriage Prop 8 in California.
One way, one God, that I can understand, but one wife that is not civilized.
Prison guards and beer distributors have poured millions into defeating the drug rehab and cannabis decrim Prop 5, also in California.
Drugs are bad, okay.
Two neo-Nazi skinheads were arrested for plotting a massacre of African Americans to culminate with the assassination of Senator Obama.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
U.S. forces threaten to shut down operations in Iraq by January 1st if their government won't agree to keep us there.
We are there at the invitation of the Iraqi government. If they were to say leave, we would leave.
And the Philadelphia Phillies defeat the Tampa Rays to win the World Series. Yeah. Sorry for all you baseball fans out there, but my favorite part of baseball season is the last out of the World Series. It means we get that silly, boring sport out of the way so we can get to the real sports.
So the who did the what now?
Yeah, exactly. You know, American baseball, the only thing that would even possibly be more boring to me than that is, of course, soccer.
Of course.
Of course.
Of course.
No offense to the present company, of course.
And none taken, of course. The only thing that soccer has to recommend it is that when you have a World Cup, people from the world actually play.
Whereas, yeah, exactly.
Whereas the World Series...
I've always thought that myself, you know. That's awfully arrogant of us.
No.
The World Series. Only American and Canadian teams need apply. For the rest of you in Japan and elsewhere around the world just aren't fit to compete. You know. Exactly. World Series. All right. Well, you know, the other thing that's happening, of course, you know, the big election's coming up here on Tuesday, and it can't be said enough times, you got to get out and vote. You must go vote. I know a lot of people out there are starting to think, you know, the polls are way up for Barack Obama, and, you know, oh, it's going to be a landslide, this and that. Don't believe the hype, folks. Get out there and vote. You know those GOP dirty tricksters are out there. They're going to be out there suppressing votes. They're going to be out there with their Diebold machines. They're going to be in charge of counting a lot of these votes. We can't let anything escape here. We have to have enough votes in the bag that we can overwhelm any dirty tricks that they might think of. So vote, vote, vote. Get your friends. Have them come out and vote. And bring your camcorder with you. If you've got one of those little handy cam type camcorders, bring your camcorder with you to the polling station. And if any shenanigans go on, you get that on tape and you get it videotaped. Also, we've got phone numbers that we'll be giving you later on the show here for if you go to vote and there are some shenanigans going on. There'll be a number you can call. We can get lawyers out there. We can get people to help protect your right to vote. Every single vote counts. Now, a lot of things have been going on here in this campaign season, and coming up in the next couple of segments, we're going to be discussing them and taking your calls at 888-7-RADICAL. We've got a lot of lawsuits that are being filed here in various states where they're trying to pull some of these voting shenanigans again. We'll give you a list of the states that might be affected so you can be prepared. In our People Speak segment, we'll be talking a little bit about Ted Stevens and some of the ads that have been running during this campaign season that just shows you how desperate the conservatives are, how they know they're in the death throes of their party. And some of this stuff coming out from them is just really rank and vile. And we're gonna make sure people know all about that. When we get to our Lunatic Fringe segment at the bottom of the hour, you're going to learn how Obama's the devil and a Marxist who's counting on the welfare class to get elected so he can legalize gay marriage and gas the Jews. Yes, gas the Jews.
At the same time?
Yes, yes. Oh, and the only solution to the Palestinian issue is to salt the earth so nothing grows there for 1,000 years. So stay tuned for the Lunatic Fringe at the bottom of the hour. Well, you'll learn what's going on the right side of the dial. Oh, my God. I tell you, having to sift through that every week, Stevie, I have to wash my hands afterwards. It's crazy.
I'm sorry. I'm just off to boil my ears.
In our second hour in Living in America, we'll be taking a look at what the banks are doing with your taxpayer bailout money. Oh, my God. You won't believe this one. In Under the Radar, our story for today is about the torture that's still going on and how our courts have decided the CIA can go ahead and hide it.
Enhanced interrogation.
Enhanced interrogation.
Allegedly.
Alleged, yes. Of course. And then more of that kind of stuff in the free-for-all segment, your calls and some of our emails from our listeners that have come in with a special ode to Joe the Plumber. This will be a good one. We'll have an ode to Joe the Plumber.
Joe the Plumber asked him the right question right here in Ohio. That's when Senator Obama revealed he wants to, quote, spread the wealth around, spread your income around. Joe's with us today. Joe, where are you? Where is Joe? Is Joe here with us today? Joe, I thought you were here today. All right. Well, you're all Joe the Plumber, so all of you stand up and say, thank you.
Congratulations, everybody. You're all Joe the Plumber now. Maybe we can all get country music deals, huh? I'm Radical Russ. We'll be right back after these short messages, taking your calls at 888-7-RADICAL, and we're going to get right to the big story after this. See you in a minute.
Voted Best Progressive Talk Radio Host, named Belleville for 2 years and counting. This is the Russ Belleville Show. I wonder if there's a typo there.
22 after the hour. Welcome back to the Russ Belleville Show. And we're looking forward to the big election that's coming up on November 4th. You got to get out there and vote. That is our big story for the day.
Now it's time for the big story.
My, what a big story.
Thanks.
Now here's Radical Russ.
Thank you very much. Yeah, the big story, the upcoming election here, November 4th. Everybody's got to get out and vote. And I'm telling you, I'm not as sanguine about the chances here for Barack Obama as maybe some people are. You know, I'm seeing the polls. I'm seeing Obama up by 13 in Pennsylvania in one of the polls. And yet I see the McCain campaign there, you know, stoking the fires, trying to get the rabid right out there to try to take that state. You know, do they know something we don't know? Do they see that as closer than what we're seeing it? And what will be the effect of racism on the vote coming up here? You know, a lot of people have talked about a Bradley effect, that there's people out there who will say they'll vote for the black candidate, but then when they get into the voting booth, they don't vote for the black candidate. I don't believe in that anymore. I don't really think that's going to be an issue anymore. First of all, I've always wondered, you know, who are these, you know, mythical white people who are saying they're going to go vote for Obama, but not? I mean, what is the pressure on them to say they're going to vote for Obama? You know, they could just as easily say they're going to vote for McCain. My point being is that, you know, the people who are already racist and aren't going to vote for Obama don't really have a reason to say they would, do they? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So, in fact, I'm beginning to think that we're going to see a reverse kind of a Bradley effect with Barack Obama. I think we're going to see a lot of folks, you know, white working class folks who amongst their friends and family might say that they're going to vote for McCain,
But then when it gets right down to it, they get there in that voting booth, they vote for Obama. Maybe it's that they fear the retribution or the looks from their friends and neighbors who may be a little bit racist, and they don't want to say they're going to vote for Obama and be considered, you know, somebody who'd vote for a black guy. So perhaps that's going to be what happens here, a reverse sort of Bradley effect. I'll be interested to see how that breaks down. You know, I'm going to be traveling during that time. I'm going to be in Tennessee. Anybody who's in the Nashville, Tennessee area, if you'd like to see me speak, I'm going to be there in 2 days. I'm speaking right across from the Capitol at the Millennium Park, I believe is what it's called, on Monday at 3 p.m. Nashville time. I'll be in Nashville, Tennessee on Monday for anybody who wants to see me speak. So I'll be flying back on Tuesday. So that's going to be kind of interesting, flying back on Election Day and trying to keep up with the news while I'm, you know, in flight and laying over in Chicago and so on. Also, I'd like to let anyone know who's fans of the show, just to get some of the housekeeping done here. We have a podcast up on the internet. It's at radicalrus.com, and it's absolutely free. You can subscribe to the podcast and get the latest recordings of the show. So if you weren't able to catch up on the entire show, if it was preempted for whatever reason, like a college football game or something, you can listen on the podcast at radicalrus.com. This election coming up is kind of a monumental, it's a hugely monumental election. And for me, as a 40-year-old man, this has got to be the election I've got my hopes up for the most. And that's why I'm so have so much trepidation here, why I have so much fear about what might happen as far as GOP dirty tricks, is because I got my hopes up so much for this election. You know, when I was born on the first day of the Tet Offensive, the Vietnam War, right, 1968. And during my first year of life, you know, we had the assassinations of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy, and we had the riots in Chicago, and, you know, 68 was a turbulent year. By 72, you get Nixon, you know, and I barely remember Nixon. I remember asking my dad when I was a kid, Daddy, what's a crook? Because Nixon had just been on the TV saying, you know, I am not a crook. So that's my first political memory. You know, 76, we got Jimmy Carter. I'm still a little too young to really know or care what's going on. But by 1980, I'm 12 years old, and we get Ronald Reagan. And I had started doing political research and started trying to follow what was going on, basically, as much as a 12-year-old can. But I just knew Reagan would be bad. And it turned out to be quite bad. And 84, same situation. I had the choice of Reagan or Mondale. And, you know, Mondale's a good man and everything, but not the most electrifying candidate to get behind. And, of course, he got trounced in a huge landslide election, where I think he lost every state except his home state. Then we get to 1988. And 1988, 20 years ago, was the first election in which I could vote, because I was finally 18 years old. And it was a choice between, you know, George H.W. Bush and Mike Dukakis. And again, Mike Dukakis, brilliant man, would have been a fabulous president, but not the most electrifying candidate to get behind, right? Again, it just felt like, you know, why is it my side always keeps nominating these guys who are going to get trounced? And you just knew they were going to get trounced, right? You didn't really get your hope up too much for Mike Dukakis. You kind of had this feeling it was going to happen. By 1992, we get Bill Clinton, and I was excited. This was the first guy I could vote for where I felt excited. I'm like, all right, this guy's a sax player. I'm a musician. He's, you know, governor, a Rhodes Scholar, an intelligent man. He's a good communicator and a dynamic person, the kind of person you can put your hopes in and get behind. Finally, a baby boomer president. Maybe they'll do something about this stupid war on drugs. I mean, he said he didn't inhale, but, you know, maybe something will happen. Maybe he'll, you know, be better for gay rights and all of that. And then once he gets elected and gets into office, he gives me Don't Ask, Don't Tell, gives me the Defense of Marriage Act. He triples the number of arrests of marijuana smokers, NAFTA, GATT, WTO, all the terrible things that happened. Well, not as terrible as Republicans, but these things that happened in the Clinton administration that I just didn't expect from a Democrat. I didn't expect a Democrat to go against basic liberal progressive principles. So I was highly disappointed in Clinton as well, for a long time. And then 96, it was Clinton Dole. So, you know, what are you gonna do? You gotta vote for Clinton. And then we get to 2000 and Bush, and 2004 with Kerry, and, you know, it felt like getting punched in the gut when we lost those elections. It was just awful. So this is the first one where I really feel excited, and I just hope that we get the kind of landslide we deserve. I'm Radical Russ. We'll be right back here after these short messages here, taking us into the People Speak segment. We'll talk a little bit about Ted Stevens. Be right back.
Don't touch that dial. We're right back to Radical Russ in just a few minutes. Hey, does anybody really have a dial anymore? Huh? You're listening to The Russ Belville Show. Your outlet for radical progressive change. It's Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome back. It's 35 after the hour, and we're talking election. That's what's on everybody's minds right now. And what's on my mind right now has to do with election fraud, voter suppression. You know, coming into this election, a lot of us are got a lot of our hopes up. We're seeing really good polls for Barack Obama and Democrats in general. We're looking at the prospect of possibly topping 60 votes in the Senate, being a filibuster-proof supermajority in the Senate. Oh, would that be a beautiful thing? Because I'm getting reports now, it says, according to Democratic aides, there is a good chance that Senator Joseph Lieberman will lose his only committee chairmanship on the Senate Homeland Security Committee next year. That's right. About time we kicked old Holy Joe to the curb. You want to be a Republican, Joe? You want to stand up for Bush? You want to speak at the Republican Party's convention? You want to hitch your wagon to John W. McCain? Go right ahead. We'll take our little 60-vote majority, and you can hang out in the minority for a while. Won't that be lovely? Oh, yeah. So, but don't get your hopes up too much. We got to be diligent. Don't think this is a done deal. Don't think this is a slam dunk. We gotta keep vigilant about this because the GOP is out there with their dirty tricksters to do whatever they can to try to subvert this election. It's kind of funny to me because, you know, they've been making a big deal about Acorn. You've heard this in the news the past couple of weeks, and we've debunked this. You know, Acorn, community organizations that are registering voters. And basically what happens is when they register voters, sometimes a few of the workers put fake names on to register. But there's no evidence that any of these fake names ever show up to vote, right? It's registration fraud. It's not voter fraud. Like, really, you think about it. If you fraudulently sign up Mickey Mouse to vote, it's not like you're going to show up to the polls and say, "Hi, everybody, I'm here to vote." You know, it's not going to happen, right? It doesn't happen. So, you know, in all these investigations, like over the thousands and thousands and thousands of allegations of voter fraud that the GOP throws at Democrats, they have proved only a small handful. You can count it on the fingers of one hand where these voter frauds have actually happened. It's not an issue. It's a smokescreen. And what it's a smokescreen for is for the dirty tricks that the GOP themselves are pulling. Now, the thing that really cracks me up about this is that when the GOP accused the Democrats of voter fraud, what it always has to do with is the implication that Democrats are trying to get more people to vote. Right. Trying to get more fraudulent voters. Right. Like they're trying to get homeless people to vote or, you know, which can vote. I mean, they can vote, homeless people, illegal aliens. They're trying to get, you know, undocumented workers.
I don't think that homeless people should be allowed to vote.
Exactly.
Or women or gays or foreigners or anybody but me.
Sit down, Justice Scalia. Yeah, so what cracks me up about this is the allegations against Democrats are always centered around the idea of getting more people to vote. Meanwhile, the cases with the GOP always have to do with getting less people to vote, right? All the GOP tricks here in the elections always have to do with getting less people to vote. Why? Because the conservative ideology is the minority in this country. They don't like you to know that. They like to fool you on the news channels and such to think that America is this centrist or center-right type of country. We're not. If you go down the line of every single progressive cause there is, you know, we talk about, you know, abortion rights or gay rights or the environment or, global warming, stem cell research, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You go down that list and you check out the polls, Don't take my word for it. Go look for yourself. Go down the list of all those, anything you would consider progressive, you know, union support, let's say, environmental regulations and so on. You go down that list and the American people will top 50% in every single one of those, sometimes topping 60% on some of those opinions. About the only thing on the right that the American people support that it wouldn't be considered progressive are the death penalty and lack of gun control. Okay, that's about it. Other than that, almost every other issue comes down on the progressive side. America is a progressive country. So when more Americans come out to vote, well, progressives win, or at least Democrats win. We could try to get them a little more progressive. So here's some of the tricks that are going on right this minute. These are some of the lawsuits that have been filed across the country. So if you're in one of these states, pay attention. These lawsuits are going across the country where the GOP is trying to suppress the vote. In Ohio, the Supreme Court denied a lawsuit by the GOP to force hundreds of thousands of voters to cast provisional ballots. Now, you know those provisional ballots. That's where you show up, your name's not on the list, so they give you a little, you know, temp ballot, temporary ballot, that they promise they'll count later, which usually doesn't happen. So if they offer you that provisional ballot stuff, don't accept it. Get on the phone, get a lawyer, get yourself to that polling place, and make sure your vote counts. In New Mexico, the state GOP tried and failed to challenge a list of 10 voters who were almost all Hispanic to try to deny their rights. In Indiana, Lake County GOP sued to shut down early voting centers. So they didn't want people voting, you know, the early voting that's so popular now. In Nevada, the chair of the state GOP wrote to the Secretary of State requesting that newly registered voters cast provisional ballots in case of mismatched information. So all that big Democratic, you know, what we've had with the Barack Obama ground game of registering all these hundreds and thousands and millions of new voters, they think that all those new voters should have to vote on the provisional ballots. And that was rejected by the Nevada Secretary of State. In Pennsylvania, the state GOP filed a lawsuit over 140,000 voter registration applications. Secretary of State there in Pennsylvania called it frivolous, and the lawsuit is still pending. 140,000 voter registration applications that the state GOP wants to try to disqualify. 140,000 voters in a swing state like Pennsylvania, where the vote could be really close. In Montana, the state GOP formally challenged 6,000 people only in left-leaning counties. Yeah, including, and this is where it went bad for the GOP, they had also in their little snare of trying to catch all these 6,000 Democratic-leaning voters, they caught a World War II vet, and they caught a guy in the Army Reserve who was about to ship out to Kuwait. And that was some pretty bad PR, you know, trying to squash their votes. So the party's executive director was pushed to quit, and the challenge was withdrawn. So at least we've succeeded up there in Montana. In Florida, the governor ordered the extended hours for early voting, Governor Charlie Crist. Now, that's a good thing. We want more early voting. And he did an emergency order that said not 8 hours a day. We're going to be open 12 hours a day because the lines are so long. However, the Secretary of State there in Florida is still instructing election officials to reject any applications with discrepancies. Now, by discrepancies, they mean if your application doesn't exactly match their records, even to the point where, like, you don't include your middle initial on one, but you did on the other, then that won't count and you won't get to vote. Now, this could potentially disenfranchise tens of thousands of voters in Florida in a swing state. Uh-huh. Yeah. And what else we got here? Wisconsin. There was a lawsuit that was demanding checks on tens of thousands of voters. The attorney general announced a voter fraud task force, which the idea here is that to try to scare people, to intimidate people that, you know, if you just registered, you might be fraudulent. We'll bust you. And finally, here in Colorado, a pending lawsuit against the Secretary of State alleges that more than 35,000 voters were purged from the rolls illegally because they used a faulty system. Now, did you notice something about all these states I mentioned? Ohio, New Mexico, Indiana, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Montana, Florida, Wisconsin, and Colorado. All swing states or states that are pretty close in this election. You notice how these GOP lawsuits, these voter suppression acts, they never take place in California or they never take place in New York state. You know, these big super Democratic states where they know it's not going to be close. Always seems to happen in the states where it's going to be close. Isn't that an interesting coincidence?
Hmm.
Yeah. I'm Radical Russ. We're going to be right back with your favorite segment, the Lunatic Fringe Awards. Ooh, we've got all sorts of lunatic fringery going on this week, including how you'll learn that Obama's the devil and a Marxist who's counting on the welfare class to get elected so he can legalize gay marriage and gas the Jews. Oh, and the only solution to the Palestinian issue is to salt the earth so nothing grows for 1,000 years. That's what's going on the right-wing radio, and we're going to bring it to you in the Lunatic Fringe coming up next.
My friends, he's like Rush Limbaugh, but without the pills, divorce, racism, homophobia, lies, and millions of dollars. It's the Radical Russ Belleville Show.
That's right. It's Russ, not Rush. Although I could use those millions of dollars. I could use that. Welcome back to the show. It's our last segment of the first hour, and you know what time that means. Now it's time for our weekly roundup of the right wing's altered reality.
The lunatic is on the grass.
From the guano loco neocon chicken hawks to the hypocritical American Taliban and the cable news punditocracy, the Russ Belleville Show presents the Lunatic Fringe Award, an award dedicated to the politician, pundit, or preacher who said the most ignorant, hateful, or bizarre quote of the week. Oh, we got some good ones lined up here. And to start off, we've got a duo that has been making the Lunatic Fringe Awards here for the last few weeks. There's this morning show, this conservative morning show, called The Quinn and Rose Show, The War Room with Quinn and Rose. It's broadcast on a few stations and on XM. And first of all, the name kind of cracks me up. It's called The Quinn and Rose Show, except the guy's name is Jim Quinn, and the woman's name is Rose Tennant. So it should either be like the Quinn and Tennant show or the Jim and Rose show. But anyway, you know, I'm just nitpicking here. But let me give you
the first time you said it, I thought you said something else as well, which is if you take the last letter N and make it an M, it becomes a different word.
No, I did not say that.
No, you didn't. But I honestly thought, really?
You were ready with the 7-second delay on that one. Right? Yeah. Well, let me play you this first one. This one comes from the female half of the duo, Rose Tennant, who's talking about the Barack Obama infomercial that was just on the TV last Wednesday. Hold on. It works better if it's turned up.
Last night in his infomercials, finally I had to say to David, turn the TV off. It's like I'm inviting the devil into my house. Yes, that's what I said. I'm inviting the devil into my house. Back to this infomercial last night where the devil was coming into my house. They were featuring these families who were in need. Well, okay. They were sad stories. But I'm looking at the background. I'm not looking at the person talking in their home. I'm looking at what they have in their home. They have color television sets. They have everything that I have in my house. I'll bet you they have an iPod. I bet you they have, you know, I'll bet they have a lot of luxuries in that home. They are not poor.
See, this is...
No.
And I'll bet you they have cable TV.
This is the old right-wing talking point you hear all the time about the poor, right? Well, our poor aren't really poor. They've got cable TV. You know, they're not really poor. Which, first of all, okay. I'll give you that one. Our poor aren't like living in garbage dumps in Shanghai, you know, scrounging for recyclables or something. You got me there. We're not that poor. But did you ever stop to think that maybe people, you know, got their cable TV when times were good and then became poor and then had to get rid of it? I know a lot of people that get rid of their cable TV when the bills need tightening.
Get
and what's
the
this
hell
thing about
out of my house in Jesus' name, I pray.
Okay.
She's not a Christian!
And what's
the devil is on my television set with my cable TV!
And what's this thing about they have color television sets? Are there any black and white sets still out there? Like, Is there a black and white out there anywhere?
It's like cathode ray TV sets are now a thing of the past and obsolete.
I guess that's what
they've got is, wirelesses and everything.
And goodness. Maybe they got that iPod as a gift from a rich relative or something. Come on. Lay off the poor, will you? Now, her partner, the male side of this equation, Jim Quinn, they were talking about the Middle East, and they were talking about the Palestinian situation, you know, the situation Israel and Palestine. And according to Jim Quinn, it's not ever solvable. There's no possible way. You just can't talk to those people, right? You just can't talk to them. And this is Jim Quinn's solution to the Palestinian issue.
It's all politics, all of it. And it will never change. There's only one way to settle the Palestine issue.
Or Palestinian.
Palestinian issue. Thank you. Is to level it and then salt the earth so that nothing grows for 1,000 years. Because that's how the Muslims would have treated each other. Wow. And did.
Yeah. So the solution here, if people can't get along, is just carpet bomb them. Carpet bomb them, wipe them all out, salt the earth so that no one else can ever live there again. That's your right-wing diplomacy for you.
I got this brilliant image in my mind of all these, like, huge bombers going over and carpet bombing the whole country. And then this squadron of little squaddies running around with salt shakers.
Yeah, and you know what? The way they talk about the poor, the right wing, the way they talk about the poor, it reminds me of that old Monty Python skit, you know, and Eric Idle saying, yeah. Oh, we had it lucky. You had a box. Oh, we had to work 36 hours a day and eat dirt.
And know? Pay Milona for permission to come to work. And we go home, our dad would kill us and dance around in our grave singing Hallelujah.
Exactly. I mean, come on. These are the kind of people, too, who talk about poverty who've never gone without a meal in their life.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I grew up in poverty. I know what it's like. I've eaten government cheese. I've lived off food stamps. I know what it's like. And it just grinds me every time I hear them talk about the poor that way. Speaking of talking about the poor, let's go on to G. Gordon Liddy, a good friend of John W. McCain, you know, a convicted felon from Watergate. G. Gordon Liddy is talking about how Obama is counting on picking up the state of Pennsylvania in the election.
And, you know, Pennsylvania has been described as Pittsburgh and Philadelphia with Alabama in the middle. Obama is counting on the urban elites and the welfare class to win the state for him.
The welfare class. And this cracks me up, too, because, okay, so Obama's relying on the urban elites. That would be the rich, right? And the welfare class, that would be the poor. And yet, his tax breaks and tax cuts work more for the middle class. What? No middle class people are voting for Obama? Come on, Liddy, give me a break. All right, we got to move on to another one of our lunatic fringers, one of our Hall of Famers, the man named Wiener, who lives in San Francisco.
Wiener.
That's right. The man named Wiener from San Francisco. It's Michael Savage, who's talking about California's Proposition 8. Now, Proposition 8 is that anti-gay marriage because, you know, the California Supreme Court said that gay marriage was okay. So now all the wingers and the Mormon Church and a bunch of people have gotten together to try to defeat this with this Prop 8, which will make gay marriage illegal. It's the first time in a state where they're coming up with a constitutional amendment to take rights away from people that already have them. This is Michael Savage with his discussion of Proposition 8.
There's a ballot initiative on homosexual marriage that is more important than you could imagine. It's called Proposition 8, and you must vote yes if you're sane. If you're insane, hate the family, hate man and woman, hate your mother and father, hate the Bible, hate the church, and hate the synagogue. Of course, you're in favor of no on Proposition 8. They don't understand what the family unit is. It's the strongest bond on earth, which is why homosexual marriage is such a threat to civilization itself.
Yes, if the gays get married, civilization collapses. It's the end of civilization if we know it, if gay people are allowed to sign a piece of paper declaring their love for each other. Yep, that's the end. Yeah, you gotta listen to what Savage is saying here, and notice how as he's saying it, you know, if you hate the family, hate man, hate woman, hate your mother, hate your father, hate the Bible, hate the church, hate the synagogue, hate. That's all we get out of Michael Savage. Oh boy. And of course, I got to tell people, if you are in California, you've got to vote no on this Proposition 8. But let's go to our winner today, Bill Cunningham. Bill Cunningham from Cincinnati, Ohio, talking about how Obama palled around with this Khalidi guy and how this Khalidi guy is a terrorist. And well, listen for yourself.
Did you hear about this Khalidi tape where Obama is toasting a guy
what?
Who wants to gas and fry Jews? Don't you understand? You're into self-loathing. You and your brother are mashugana. This Obama guy loves the PLO. Can't you figure that out? Jews for McCain, because Obama wants to gas the Jews like the PLO wants to gas the Jews, like the Nazis gas the Jews. You got Obama introducing Arab terrorists.
Godwin alert.
Excellent.
Hysterical reference to Nazi Germany. Godwin alert. Hysterical reference to Nazi Germany.
So Bill Cunningham, for demonstrating a stunning combination of anti-Semitism and a mastery of pure asshattery, you are the winner of this week's Lunatic Fringe.
That is class. And apart from anything else, he sounds like the Hooded Claw.
Yeah, he does.
I'll get you next time, Barack Obama. Next time.
Is it any wonder where we got so many people who are stuck in their cars, driving back and forth to work in traffic jams, being crammed their ears full of this right-wing hatred week after week after day after day? It's unbelievable. I'm Radical Russ. We're back.
Live and direct from the free speech zone called America. The weekend home for truly radical progressives. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ.
Hey, welcome to the program, everyone. Glad to have you here. It's hour two of the Russ Belville Show, where us truly radical progressives get together and talk about the issues that are happening here in the waning days of the nightmare of the George W. Bush maladministration. Oh, yeah, we got all sorts of great stuff for you. Check us out up on the web at RadicalRuss.com. We've got an archive podcast of every show dating back for the past 2 years. It's absolutely free. You can sign on to it with iTunes. You can download it directly to your computer. You can get your Radical Russ fix on your iPod or other MP3 player. Check it out at RadicalRuss.com. And while you're there, if you're so inclined, I know the economy's tough, but if you're so inclined, make a donation to the Russ Belville Show. We are a completely independently produced show. We belong to no network, to no station. We subscribe to no corporate philosophies here. We are completely independent, me and Stevie. Anything you donate goes directly to the Stevie Webb Fund.
Does it?
Yeah, well, some of it.
The Stevie Webb lump of coal fund.
That's right. And speaking of Stevie Webb, let's welcome him back to the show, our man from across the pond, the only immigrant worker who's still willing to work for an American dollar, an odd fish who got his chump when he was... Oh, I gotta start that again. An odd fish who got off his chump when he was on the hoy with his chaps, racing around like a blue-arsed fly after a comely lass shaped like a dead heat in a Zeppelin race. It's our own Stevie Webb.
Hey! Thank you very much, sir.
I tell you, I'm so engaged with this election. And one of the fun things about this this upcoming onslaught of the Democratic majorities that are going to happen, not only in the federal level, but on many, many state levels, is watching the death throes of the conservative ideology, is watching these people that have been cultured since the age of Ronald Reagan to believe in the trickle-on economics and to believe in, you know, the welfare queen myth and you know, God, guns, and guts made America free. All those people, they're going through their death throes. They know their time is waning. And not just ideologically, but demographically. They know that the era of the straight white male is coming to an end here in America. You know, by 2050, white people will be a statistical minority in this country. They'll be a plurality, no longer a majority. That is, they'll drop below 50% of the population. There'll still be more white people than any other group, but they will be a minority. All the minorities combined will be a majority over white people, right? And we're getting more secular in this country too. We get more people that are rejecting the dogmatic religions, rejecting the fundamentalism in this country, and turning to more enlightened type of religions. There's a big movement in the progressive left evangelical movement that's going on right now. So they're in their death throes. These people, they know the end is coming, and they're just clinging to their little life rafts of ideology that are sinking right before them. And I wanted to bring this one up. This is one I wanted to play this on the Lunatic Fringe, but I kind of thought it deserved its own thing. And, you know, when I'm doing Lunatic Fringe, I kind of have to run pretty quickly. So I wanted to play this one. This is Dennis Prager. Dennis Prager is one of these conservative talk show hosts, and he's out there giving a speech. I think this was in Minnesota. I'm not exactly sure. But he's giving a speech to about 3,000 people talking about the American way. And, you know, of course, you know, intimating that Obama's not really American and doesn't stand for what we true Americans stand for and so on. I thought Prager had a really interesting take on the American values. Listen to this, and just as you're listening to it, just imagine, you know, that these are the right wingers, you know, with all the varnish stripped away. You're starting to see their core values. This is Dennis Prager.
Folks, let me tell you something. Equality, which is the primary value of the left, is a European value, not an American value. All right? To half of my fellow Americans because they have been Europeanized in their values. The French Revolution is not the American Revolution. The French Revolution said liberty, fraternity, equality. The American Revolution said life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We have lost touch with what our distinctive American values are. We have distinctive American values. We have a better value system, and this is being protected by one of the two parties, the Republican Party.
All right, so that's Dennis Prager talking to a room full of conservatives about how us liberals have been Frenchified. We're Frenchified because we believe in equality. That equality is not an American value because it was, you know, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, not equality, right? Unfortunately, Dennis hasn't read his Declaration of Independence. You know, that one little part that says, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. Yeah, must have missed that part. Or maybe he missed that part in the U.S. Constitution where it says, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of laws. Must have missed that point. You know, Dennis Prager and these conservatives, the way they warp and twist the Constitution to their own, you know, authoritarian, theocratic values reminds me of an old Star Trek episode.
Down the centuries, you have slurred the meaning of the words, we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty.
That's right. Maybe Captain Kirk can get it through Dennis Prager's head there. The Constitution is for the Yangs and the Combs alike. It's for all of us. And we're all created equal under that Constitution. But this just highlights, you know, again, like I'm saying, the death throes of the GOP and the desperation that they're under right now. They can see the handwriting on the wall. They know that change is coming. They can feel it. They read the polls. They're not stupid, at least in that regard. So they're really, really desperate. And one of the most desperate ads that's out there, and this one's been condemned by a number of groups, is in North Carolina. Now, you realize North Carolina is the home of Senator Liddy Dole, kinda. You know, Elizabeth Dole. She supposedly is the senator from North Carolina, but according to the reports in the North Carolina media, she hardly goes to North Carolina at all. She mostly just lives in Washington. But Elizabeth Dole, she's the senator out there, and she's in danger of losing her race in North Carolina. And this is a huge problem for the Republicans because North Carolina, the Senate seat there, should be, you know, safe, you know, red state safe. But she's in a battle with a progressive Democrat named Kay Hagan. Now, Kay Hagan is starting to close on Liddy Dole. So in desperation, Liddy Dole has run this ad.
I'm Elizabeth Dole. And I approved this message.
A leader of the Godless Americans PAC recently held a secret fundraiser in Kay Hagan's honor.
There is no God to rely on. There was no Jesus.
Well, taking under God out of the Pledge of Allegiance, you're down with that.
We're down with that.
In God we trust, you're going to whip that off the money?
Yeah, we would.
Godless Americans and Kay Hagan. She hid from cameras, took godless money. What did Hagan promise in return?
There is no God.
Uh-huh. So that's Elizabeth Dole trying to scare the voters of North Carolina into believing that if they elect Kay Hagan, the God will be taken out of America. We won't have it on our money or our pledge or anything. There'll be no God. Unfortunately, the problem with that is Kay Hagan is a Christian. Yeah, Kay Hagan is an elder at the First Presbyterian Church in Greensboro, North Carolina, has taught Sunday school and accompanied youth mission trips. She's as Christian as they get. So Elizabeth Dole, shame on you for running an ad like that. And so what if she was an atheist? What, atheists can't run? Atheists can't be good elected officials? Oh, that always chaps me a little bit when I hear that. Anyway, we got to take a break here. We'll be coming back in just a few minutes with more information. We got our Under the Radar segment coming up where we'll learn about the CIA and torture and our marijuana minute. So stay tuned. This is the Russ Belville Show.
The fastest growing progressive talk show on this station in this time slot. Right. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back to the show, everyone, and it's 20 after the hour. And that means it's time for our Marijuana Minute, a 60-second roundup of the stories involving cannabis across this country. For the election this year in California, the Californians will be voting on Proposition 5, a measure that will bring more rehabilitation to drug offenders, get nonviolent drug offenders released from jail and put into treatment, and decriminalize the personal possession of marijuana. Vote yes on Prop 5 in California. In Massachusetts, question two is another decriminalization measure that will decriminalize the personal possession of marijuana by adults and prevent them from getting a criminal offender records information database record, which will help them in trying to get jobs and keep from ruining the chances for students to go to school. Vote yes on question two in Massachusetts. And in Michigan, they'll be voting on Proposal 1, which is a proposal to legalize medical marijuana in the state of Michigan, the first state in the Midwest to legalize medical marijuana. Vote yes on Proposal 1 in the state of Michigan. All right, now we need to get to our next segment here. Of course, it's time to go under the radar. Every week at the Russ Belville Show, we sift through the headlines to find the stories buried in the back pages or ignored on the evening news. Stories our citizens and our leaders need to hear. In this segment, we go under the radar. Going under the radar today, we're going to talk a little bit about torture. Oh, I'm sorry. I mean enhanced interrogation techniques.
There you go.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to offend Cheney. You know he's listening.
I know.
There was a recent decision coming out of federal courts that ruled that the CIA can hide statements from imprisoned suspected terrorists that the agency tortured them in its secret set of prisons. That's right, the CIA can actually go about hiding the statements from people that we've had imprisoned in secret prisons. They can hide the statements that they've been tortured. This was Chief Judge Royce Lamberth of the Washington, D.C. Circuit Court declined to review the government's assertions that the allegations of torture from men held in CIA's black site prisons, whether truthful or not, would put the nation at risk of grave danger if it was allowed to make public. Basically, what happened here is the ACLU had filed a lawsuit to force the government to unredact allegations from high-value detainees, right? So basically, you know, these detainees, they make these allegations. The CIA gets to go through their statements and with the black marker and redact parts of it for national security purposes, right? Well, the parts that they redacted were parts where the detainees were saying, we were tortured. We were tortured in these secret prisons, and so the CIA just blacks that out. The ACLU said, well, you know, you need to unredact that because freedom of information, and it's not a national security interest, you know, as to whether or not someone was tortured in these prisons. Now, the judge said, quote, the court, giving deference to the agency's detailed good faith declaration, is disinclined to second-guess the agency in its area of expertise through in-camera review, which is where the judge would take the evidence to his chambers and no one else would see it, and he could, you know, check out what's going on. He didn't even want to do that, right? He trusts the CIA. You know, they're making good faith effort, you know. Those CIA guys, they're good guys. They're, you know, shipping people off to prisons in Eastern Europe and torturing them, but, you know, hey, we'll get, that's good faith. You know, we'll just let them do that. So the thing about this is that by doing this, it allows the CIA to continue with this regime of extraditions, renditions to these countries, to these secret prisons, and to continue torturing guys because they know it's not going to get out in court. They know that with this decision, they can continue to redact that. Now, the CIA, of course, explains that, well, we have to do this. We have to redact this information. According to the CIA's Wendy Hilton in a sworn court affidavit, she says, quote, among the details that cannot be publicly released are the conditions of the detainees' capture, the employment of alternative interrogation methods, and other operational details. Specifically, disclosure of such information is reasonably likely to degrade the CIA's ability to effectively question terrorist detainees and elicit information necessary to protect the American people, end quote. So their case here, the CIA's case, is they've got to keep their torture secret because if it got out what kind of methods they were using to torture people, that would help the enemy. Like somehow if Al-Qaeda knows we're waterboarding them, they'll what? Grow gills? What? What are they going to do with this information? and that we have to keep it a secret that we're taking these secret prisons, right? The secret prisons that we all know about, right? Yeah. Okay. That's their case. Now, the other thing that's amazing about this is that sometimes these detainees might be lying about being tortured. And so the ACLU was saying, well, you don't need to redact the lies, right? If it's a lie, if they didn't really get tortured and they're just lying about it, you could unredact that and the case could be made that the terrorist suspect was lying. And the court also said that no, the CIA should also be redact the lies. So if a guy wasn't tortured but says he was, they can redact that too. Which, and their excuse for this was, if we redacted the statements they said when they were really tortured, but we don't redact the statements they say when they weren't tortured, they could cleverly tell these kind of reverse psychology torture stories to cleverly let everyone know what's really happening in there. So it all has to be redacted. This is the kind of legal pretzels and knots that these conservative judges and the Bush administration, you know, these same guys like John Yoo that were trying to tell us, you know, that torture would be legal as long as it didn't cause organ failure or anything like that. This is what the conservative courts have done to this country. And, you know, a lot of people look at the legacy of George W. Bush, you know, with Katrina and 9/11 and Iraq and all that kind of stuff. But really, really, one of the most enduring legacies of this George W. Bush nightmare is the transformation of the federal appeals courts. Now, you know, this has been going on since Ronald Reagan. You know, 3 decades, part of the conservative, agenda has been to position their judges in all the federal appeals courts so they can shape the law. Now, by Inauguration Day, by the time January 20th rolls around, Republican-appointed judges, most of them conservatives, are projected to make up about 62% of the bench. Yeah, 3 out of 5 judges in the federal appeals court level are conservatives. And they control 10 of the 13 circuit courts. 10 of the 13 circuit courts in the hands of a conservative majority that has been appointed by Republican presidents since Reagan. And then, of course, you know, not to mention the Supreme Court, right? With the 4-4 and the one swing vote that we got going right now. And you look at, you know, Thomas and Scalia and Alito and Judge Roberts as that solid conservative majority. So once again, I got to speak to the American people here. And in specific, I want to talk to that undecided voter, that rare duck, the undecided voter. What the heck are you waiting for? What else do you need to convince you to vote one way or the other? For me, even beyond anything, it's this courts issue for me. You know, even because I've got my disagreements with Obama. I don't think any politician's perfect. I got some problems with some of what Obama's done. You know, looking back to that, like the FISA capitulation, there's one example. His backing off on decriminalization of marijuana, that's another example. But, you know, this court issue is a big one because this next president's going to pick the next two or three Supreme Court justices. So if for any reason at all that you need to vote for Barack Obama, it's the Supreme Court. I'm Radical Russ. We're coming back in just a moment with the free-for-all segment, just a bunch of miscellaneous stories that have sifted through the cracks through the rest of the week while we've talked about the election. We're right back after these messages.
Don't touch that dial. We're right back to Radical Russ in just a few minutes. Hey, does anybody really have a dial anymore? You're listening to The Russ Belville Show. Agent 007, running surveillance on Red Wing Radio so you don't have to. It's messy. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back, everyone. 35 after the hour here at the Russ Belville Show. 5 hours a show, 2 hours to get it in. And this segment here, it's time for our free-for-all. That's right, time for the free-for-all segment, the segment where we collect all the little miscellaneous stories that have been swept under the rug while everybody's been paying attention to the big stories this week and with the election happening. A lot of our free-for-all has to do with the stuff that's floating around the election. We just recently had the 7-count conviction of Ted Stevens.
It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
Yeah, Ted Stevens is guilty of 7 counts of corruption from accepting gifts from a contractor, among other things. He's huge, multi-thousand-dollar gifts from these contractors. That,
Senator Stevens, is that your massage chair?
No!
Yeah, this is the guy. This is what amazes me about. Maybe it's something in Alaska. Maybe it's in the water. But, you know, Ted Stevens gets this contractor to buy all this stuff for him that goes into his house. And then Stevens' defense is, well, you know, I didn't ask for it. And I don't really own it. I was going to give it to someone else. I don't really own it. Right. Somehow in Alaska.
That doesn't work when you're find your kid with pot and it's not going to work for you, Senator Stevens. Well, I was just holding it for someone.
Exactly. Well,
gosh,
put. You know, this must be something in Alaska where people can have stuff but not really own it. I mean, we had that with Sarah Palin, right? Where she got the $150,000 wardrobe. And then she comes out and says, well, I didn't ask for it. And you know, I'm not going to keep it. It's not really mine. Well, there's some more ethical things that we need to get into here. First, let's start with Ted Stevens. Since 1789, we got to understand here that as far as senators being convicted of felonies, this is only the 5th time in all of history, you know, going back to 1789, the 5th time in all history that a sitting U.S. senator has been found guilty of a felony. And he's guilty of 7 felonies. But he's continuing to run for the Senate. In his written statement, he says, quote, I am innocent. This verdict is the result of the unconscionable manner in which the Justice Department lawyers conducted this trial. I ask that Alaskans and my Senate colleagues stand with me. Good luck on that one. As I pursue my rights, I remain a candidate for the United States Senate. So he's going to continue to run, and he's going to lose because there's a great Democrat up there, former mayor of Anchorage, Mark Begich. I probably mispronounced the name, but Democrat Mark Begich is likely to pull this one out. But there was some question as to Ted Stevens as to whether or not he'd be voting for himself. Because in Alaska, convicted felons can't vote. So Ted Stevens might be running for Senate, but unable to vote for himself. Well, the latest update on that, the Washington Post had said something about him not being able to vote for himself. But the top election official in Alaska, her name's Gail Fenumai. Top election official in Alaska, emailed the Washington Post to say that as of now, Stevens is still able to vote on November 4th. The Department of Law has determined that until a final judgment and sentence has been entered in the federal court in his case, Senator Stevens is eligible to vote. So until he's sentenced, this seven-time convicted felon, until he gets the official sentence, he can vote for himself for the Senate. That's amazing to me. Now, he can continue to serve in the Senate even after he's convicted, as long as he's still on appeal. This is a Senate tradition. As long, you know, if he appeals this case, as long as the appeals are going through, he can continue to serve in the Senate. Only when all of the appeals are exhausted, then an ethics committee can do an expulsion hearing to try to kick him out of the Senate. But even then, even if they get to that expulsion hearing, they need 67 votes to kick him out. So even if we get that 60-vote majority in the Senate for Democrats, there's still going to have to be seven Republicans that'll come along and vote to kick this guy out of the Senate. And according to the Senate's website, only 15 senators have been expelled in the history of the Senate. And mostly that was during the Confederacy and the Civil War and all these guys, these senators that were supporting the Confederacy. So amazing, isn't it? That a sitting senator, the longest serving Republican senator, by the way, been there as long as I've been alive. He's been in the Senate since 1968. He might still be able to stay in the Senate after getting convicted of seven felonies. Isn't that amazing? Now, on the Sarah Palin ethics front, you know, we had talked about her $150 worth of clothes. Here's a new complaint that's been filed against Alaska Governor Sarah Palin, accusing her of abusing her power by charging the state with when her children traveled with her. This was something we covered in brief last week. We had talked about how the AP reported that Palin charged more than $21,000 to the state taxpayers to take her three daughters on commercial flights to events where they weren't invited. And then later, amended expense forms, to specify that it was official state business. So she flew the kids, $21,000, to places where they weren't invited and weren't needed, and charged the taxpayers for it. That's the way they think of us. You know, they like to come off, these Republicans. They like to try to paint the picture of Joe Sixpack and Joe the Plumber, you know, and all the salt of the earth type people. And it's exactly the opposite. They do not think very highly of you and me. They do not. They see us as just the common people, the people they got to butter up every 4 years to get a vote. But after that, it's back to their high-profile, jet-setting, elite lifestyle. That's the other thing that cracks me up. When they talk about the Democrats being the elites, and these are the people that have 9 houses, 13 cars, and 9 figures in their bank account. Now, speaking of big figures in the bank account, let's take a look at the corporate world for a second in our free-for-all here. You may have heard this over the week, but ExxonMobil, the company that had set the world record for the most profit made in a single quarter, and that last time we talked about them, I think it was second quarter, they made somewhere around $12 billion profit. Well, they set the world record again. ExxonMobil just announced for their third quarter a $14.83 billion profit. John W. McCain, what are you going to do about that?
Today, ExxonMobil reported record profits. Senator Obama voted $4 billion in corporate giveaways to the oil companies. I voted against it. When I'm president, we're not going to let that happen.
When John W. McCain's president in his dreams, he won't let ExxonMobil profit like that. Except if you look at the McCain tax cut proposal. If you look at the McCain tax cut proposal, the 5 largest American oil companies, who are taxed a total of $13.4 billion, would get a savings under the McCain tax plan of another $3.8 billion. Yeah, ExxonMobil itself, the company that made $14.83 billion in profit, a $1.2 billion tax cut. Tax savings under the McCain plan, $1.2 billion for ExxonMobil. So don't believe it when John W. McCain is telling you he won't let ExxonMobil profit like that. He's selling you a line during the election, and if he were to win, things would go back to business as usual. You cannot point to one single issue in which, in the economy, in which John W. McCain is not the clone of George W. Bush. And if you want more of that, rearview mirror, same old last 8 years for the next four, you can look forward to things like this. The economy shrinking. The U.S. third quarter economy shrank by 0.3%. Yeah, this is following a 2.8% growth in the prior quarter. So we went from 2.8% growth, 2.3% shrinking. And the unemployment figures are not much better. The labor market's now the worst it's been since the prior two recessions in 2001 and the early 1990s. The number of people who have been unemployed for 27 weeks or more, you know, so longer than a half year here, have reached 2 million in September. 2 million Americans who've been unemployed for over 6 months. That's 21% of all unemployed people, and approaching the prior peaks of 23% that we achieved in 2003 and 1992. The American people have figured it out. The experiment is over. Conservative ideology has lost. The people have figured it out. They've seen the results. They've seen Katrina. They're seeing the recession. They've seen the bailouts. They've seen the economic crises. They've seen America get attacked even when it was warned it was going to get attacked. And the president read My Pet Goat. It's time for a change. We can't wait for that change much longer. Only a couple more days, folks. Make sure you get out and vote. I'm Radical Russ. We're coming back with your emails at radicalrussat@gmail.com in our spam segment. Stay tuned.
Join the radical revolution on the inner tubes. Log on to RadicalRuss.com now.
It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
Oh, we're going to miss Senator Ted Stevens. Should he be forced to resign? It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. That kind of encapsulates the John W. McCain type understanding of the internet, doesn't it? Yeah, Radical Russ here. Glad to have you back.
The internets. I found it on the internet.
That's right. It's on the internet. I use the Google. 50 after the hour, sitting here with Stevie Lee, just kind of wrapping up the show here, the last show before the election. And, you know, I'd been sitting here all week, you know, thinking, what am I going to say before the election? Last show before the election. And, you know, I guess there's not much more to be said that hasn't already been said. You know, get out to vote. Don't fall for the dirty tricks. Take your camera. It's the most important election, yada, yada, yada. But I want you to think just a little bit, you know, this election season, about all of the sacrifices that have been made by people throughout our history, by great Americans, to protect our right to vote and to give us the right to vote. How people worldwide, even today, even still today, look to the United States of America as the beacon of freedom and democracy, and the place where, you know, the will of the people will be heard. And it's a very, very serious right and franchise that we have. Don't take it lightly. I guess I can't emphasize it anymore, how important voting is and how much I believe in it. I have a friend that I speak to, a really, really brilliant man, who I can converse with through email every week. And he's one of these guys who's of the conviction, kind of like, you know, back in 2000 when Ralph Nader was running and said, you know, it's just the corporate party. They're all corporate. The Republicans, the Democrats, they're all the same. They're all the corporate party. Doesn't matter which one you vote for. They're all the same. Don't fall for that this year, right? Don't fall for that. You know, back in 2000, you could be excused for falling for that because really up to then, you know, you had Clinton, who was kind of a Democrat, but kind of, you know, Republican-ish in some issues. And they did seem a lot the same. But if the last 8 years of George W. Bush haven't proved to every living person with eyes in their skull and the ability to read that they, if this hasn't proven that the Democrats are far, far different than the Republicans and worthy of your vote, I don't know what it's going to take. Now, I did grant him some of his points. I did grant that, yes, in a lot of ways, the Republican Party and Democratic Party are the same on a lot of issues. For example, take the drug war. You know, Joe Biden was one of the toughest drug warriors out there. Militaristic interventions. You know, McCain's talking about staying in Iraq, and Obama's talking about going into Afghanistan. I mean, everybody still seems to be pro-war. So there are some places, you know, where the Republicans and Democrats are the same, but there are so many others where they're not. And probably the, you know, we could say abortion rights, gay rights, tons of issues we could talk about, the environment, believing in science, believing in education, funding those kind of things, supporting the middle class. But more than anything, I would just say it's the Democrats' ability to effectively govern that makes them the reason you need to vote Democratic. You know, that famous saying of the Republican Party, you know, the 9 worst words in the English language, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. Government is bad. Government needs to be drowned in the bathtub. You know those types. And that's what we've seen through 8 years of George W. Bush and what you'd get from the next 4 years of the McCain-Palin administration. The idea that government is best, that government governs least, and the fewer regulations you've got in the way of Wall Street and corporations, the better. If you want 8 more years of what you've gotten, then by all means, vote for McCain. But for everyone else with a heart and a mind and a soul, vote Democratic. All right, well, we better get to our listener email. That people send us emails at radicalrus@gmail.com, and in our last segment, we like to get to them.
I don't like spam!
Dennis, there's some lovely filth over here.
It is. It's like catnip to British people. Whenever you play a Monty Python clip, they cannot resist.
Oh.
our first email here comes from Jim in Oregon, who sent us an ode to Joe the Plumber. We have an ode, a little bit of poetry.
An ode.
Do we have any poetry music?
Let me see if I can find some. Hold on.
Oh, we'll find some poetry. This is Jim from Oregon writing us a little ode to Joe the Plumber, Joe Wurzelbacher, the highlight of the McCain campaign, you know, the average Joe who didn't show up. You remember McCain looking for him.
Joe the plumber asked him the right question right here in Ohio. That's when Senator Obama revealed he wants to, quote, spread the wealth around, spread your income around. Joe's with us today. Joe, where are you? Where is Joe?
Where is Joe?
Joe here with us today.
Joe?
Joe, I thought you were here today.
Joe?
Joe?
All right.
Joe?
Well, you're all Joe the Plumber, so okay. All of you.
He doesn't answer to Joe the Plumber anymore, anyway.
Joe the Plumber. Exactly. So that's the John McCain thing here. So we got this ode to Joe the Plumber from Jim from Oregon. Here we go.
Here, I'll give you a little strum on the lyre.
There we go. Perfect.
There we go.
Perfect.
Strum the lyre.
Joe Wurzelbacher was a simple dude up there in Ohio, working hard to put food on his family, off to the job he'd go. He could snake a drain with the best of men, and set a toilet, too. His skills were many, his hours were long, but his benefits were few. Then one day good fortune hit, as sure as luck is dumb. 10 seconds in a camera lens is all that's needed by some. Now he's writing a book and country songs. No licenses required. He's quoted by John and Sarah too, the bass he has inspired. My friend, someday the flash will leave your pan and you'll get your real life back. But until that day, make all you can out of your plumber's crack. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Uncle!
Thank you.
Oh,
thank you.
Uncle!
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So that's
author, author.
With the ode to Joe the Plumber. Now, I also got an email from Wilbur. You may
Wilbur.
Have heard. Wilbur. Yeah, Wilbur's back.
Wilbur's back. We love you, Wilbur.
We love Wilbur. Wilbur sends us hate mail every now and then. We love getting it. It's joyful. Because for people that don't use the internet a lot, you may not know this, but on the internet, when you're typing stuff, if you type stuff in all capital letters, it means you're shouting. Right? So he sends me all these screeds where he shouts at me, and I just love them. This is a nice, short, sweet one from Wilbur, who does also see the writing on the wall regarding John McCain and Barack Obama, and he wants to complain to me about how, you know, my vote for Obama is wrong. And this is from Wilbur. those like John McCain served their country with honor. So those on the far left would have the freedom to do nothing but ridicule America. All right, that's my will.
Is that it?
Really short. That's it.
Oh.
Got to stay close on the pot on that one there, the volume pot there, right?
Oh, man. Hate.
All right, so thanks a lot, Wilbur. And our final one here, our final note here comes from Robin from Oregon, who writes that she just heard that Vincent Bugliosi, who wrote The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, has found an attorney general to allow him to begin his prosecution. There's only one catch. This AG has not yet been elected. It's Charlotte Dennett, who's running for attorney general in Vermont, the state that has had numerous cities calling for the arrest of Bush administration officials for war crimes. So check out CharlotteDennettForAttorneyGeneral.com. CharlotteDennettForAttorneyGeneral.com in Vermont. She has promised to prosecute Bush administration officials for war crimes if she is elected. So go Vermont. I'm Radical Russ. Don't forget to vote in the election. Check us out at RadicalRust.com. We'll be back next weekend at this time on this station, taking your calls and reading your emails. Peace, everybody, and let's hope next weekend we've got a different administration to talk about that's a Democratic one. We're out of here.